When the tape ended, we were talking about international study that Dr. Summers had completed and done during the course of his career. Were you involved in international, at MSU, the International Studies Program?
Oh,
how,
yes.
How were you involved in that?
Well, when we got the Ford Foundation grant, you know, for the really, the, which is what started the, and ended up recommending a dean's office in international programs. They had assembled committees or groups, advisory groups, they were working on various aspects of international affairs and how it should be developed in the university. And I was in on that year-long study to begin with, which ended up in recommending that we develop an Office of International Programs. And then I served on and a number of committees, eventually was involved in the area study programs that were developed here. I participated with Professor Fee in history and in the Asian area, had summer programs each summer, and that actually grew into the Asian Studies Center. So I think I played a role actually in developing the Asian Studies Center. In the African Studies Center, Marvin Solomon, who was in the Natural Science Basic College area here, he had been to Africa, and I got to know him actually through bowling. He had a bowling league, and so the two of us got together, and we were brainstorming about what we could do to get that better recognized. So I think the two of us had a role to play in the development of the African Studies Center on campus. And then in 1979 and 80, I was asked to chair a review of international programs, which resulted in this publication, actually.
Okay. International Education at Michigan State and in an Independent World.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That, I think, had a, they did this every 10 years, a comprehensive review, and there was a large number of people, important people on campus were involved in that study. And the major part of this is recognizing the independent world, that we were no longer dominated and we had to relate to various parts of the world. I think that was an important contribution which I made in sharing that group.
I read it as independent, and it's interdependent.
I
should correct that. interdependent, yeah.
Yeah, we depend on one another, and actually we're becoming increasingly in that direction. We're no longer a dominant part of the world when it comes to various things take place that some of the smaller countries have as much a voice as we do, such as what we're now doing in Korea and other parts of the world.
At the time you did the Asian studies work, what were the countries involved in that? Do you remember?
Well, we were primarily involved Southeast Asia.
Okay.
Japan, China, and the countries of the southeastern peninsula of the continent. Mm-hmm. India to some extent. But we would have a summer program every year where we would normally either use some of our own faculty or bring in people to provide additional expertise to the study of that part of the world. So Professor Fee and I organized that actually for a number of years, and as I say, that's what developed into the African Studies Center, which is now one of the strongest in the country, actually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And let's see, then you were asking about the international role, and then I became an assistant dean, actually, in international programs. and one summer took the place of Dean Smuckler. In keeping that deanship going, and then as an assistant provost for 3 years, this part of the university was also an area of responsibility. So I continued, actually I continued in one way or the other within management programs my entire career. Mm-hmm.
And travel's been part of your retirement too.
Travel's been part of my retirement, actually. And I've been involved in two international, worldwide groups, we have an International Geographical Union, or Congress, which is the worldwide organization. They develop commissions to develop certain topics which need to be worked on. And we know for the last 12 years have been working on areas of marginality where they're not doing as well as they could as a region. And we get various parts of the world. We have 12 full-time members, which I represent the United States. This actually is my last year on that group. We meet in a different part of the world each summer. So that has provided travel all over the world, from Argentina to Zimbabwe, to Switzerland, to Norway, to Prague, and Czech Republic.
Is this an independent group, or is it United Nations related, or?
It's there's associations nationally. Mm-hmm. This is the association for the entire world.
I see.
For geography. Mm-hmm. It's called the International Geographical Union, and there are almost every country of the world is part of that or member. Mm-hmm. They're having a meeting this summer in Seoul, Korea. I was supposed to go to that, but I won't be able to make it this year for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. When we are looking at the history of Michigan State in the last 50 years, and talking about looking, because we've been trying to get the information from faculty members and administrators regarding the various presidents and provosts with whom they work. We already talked about John Hanna. Did you have much contact with Dr. Horton?
Quite a bit. I had more contact with Dr. Wharton than I did with Hanna.
How would you assess his presidency?
Well, I think in a time and place where we were, for various reasons, he was, I think, very important to us. One was that he was an Afro-American, which we needed at the time, actually, to represent us in higher education, but as well, he was geographically, he was much more closely involved with the international economic and geographic situations.
His scholarly background and expertise, and then
right.
his world travel too.
Right.
So he had a knowledge of that direct
right.
knowledge.
Yeah. So in that sense, I was closer to President Wharton than I ever was to President Hanna.
I see.
So I got to appreciate him, and I think he got to appreciate me. He wrote me a very nice letter when I retired from the university. So with Wharton, it was very good. Then Gordon Geyer, known as a colleague, actually, over in the Natural Science Building.
Mm-hmm.
So Gordon was a real friend for a long standing. Walter Adams, Walter actually was interested in economic geography, and we had a faculty member by the name of Vinge, Clarence Vinge. So Clarence Vinge and myself we had a sort of a relationship with Laura Adams, which was a very interesting one. Hardin really didn't know and had very little contact with him. That was in during the latter stages of my academic career. Who have I missed?
Leading up to now, you retired. You left the chair in what year? 70.
I left here in 79.
79. Okay. All right. So Dr. Mackey was president.
Yeah.
At that time.
And I got through Mackey. I was very active in academic governance. With the steering committee of the university, so I worked as the chair of the steering committee. The contact with Mackey actually was frequent and close, so I got to work with Mackey in a very, very positive way.
What were the key issues when you were at that time? It was the early 80s then?
That was in 79, 80.
Right. Okay. What were the key issues at that time at the university, if you remember?
An issue always has been is to get the faculty at large to understand the importance of having a governance unit which is strong, active, and has influence in the issues of the university. So the issues at that time were the minority relationships. It was a very, very important problem. The increasing importance of women was another problem. And getting the ratios of women up in various parts of the university so that they were more representative of that faction of the society. But a problem has always been is to get the faculty to recognize that they should be involved with academic governance, that they can have a role, and their voice is important, actually, to the administration. So I had a chance to see that from both, the department administration as well as the university administration.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of the other faculty that were influential at that time in academic governance?
Fred Williams was... Walter, no, not... Economist, economic specialist in world trade.
Mordecai Krenin?
Max Krenin, right. Mm-hmm. Max Krenin.
Was Henry Silverman involved?
Henry Silverman was involved. Mm-hmm. I served on many standing committees university-wide, where I got to know a large number of faculty. And that in itself is one of the advantages, actually, of serving in that, is you get to know and work with other parts of the university, individuals.
Beyond your unit.
Other than your own unit, mm-hmm. Right.
Was President Mackey supportive of the efforts of the academic governance?
He was very supportive, mm-hmm. Right. Mackey was misunderstood by, I think he was one of the best presidents we had, who, in terms of knowing the role of a university president. Major problem that Cecil had was the way he worked with individuals. We often didn't realize what he was after, and made it, the relations weren't as quite as smooth as they could have been. Mm-hmm.
The relationship with the board at that time, was that a cause of problems or?
The relationship with the board was, I think, better than it was with the faculty.
Mm-hmm. How did the tough economic times in the state affect that at all?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. You know, that went up and down, of course. And, this is during President Mackey?
By President Mackey, right.
Well, he was, I think, again, reasonably successful in working with the state legislature. Mm-hmm.
How was it?
It's just the mannerism and the way in which he operated was not, I don't think, appreciated by people, especially faculty members, because he was not as close, not as, and sometimes was very abrupt in his mannerisms. But,
were there cuts being advocated or made that was part of the problem, or no?
That was, the budget was part of the problem. The cuts, I'm just trying to rack my memory as to what years those took.
Yeah.
Those
I know.
Cuts took
place. Seems like ancient history, but yeah. It's only right. 20 years almost.
Right.
How was it that you became involved in the presidential search for, let's go back. Were you surprised when Dr. Mackey resigned, or?
You know, well, he had a chance, you know, to go to the University of Hawaii, and that didn't finally materialize. Then he had a chance to stay on here. I think there was an opportunity to go elsewhere as well in the United States, other than Hawaii.
How was it that you became involved in the search for the new president after he left?
As a member of the steering committee, as chair of the steering committee, I went to I was supposed to be at all the board meetings to represent the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to know a number of the board members very well. Barbara Sawyer, Dade from, I worked with Dade on the presidential search for when I was chair of that with when we got DiBiagio.
Blanche Martin was on the...
Blanche Martin was on. I got to know Blanche quite well. So what I'm trying to say is that I got to know the board members quite well. And there were several candidates for that search position. And I had worked with those board members who made that decision as who that was to be. So I think that's... what influenced them was their knowledge of me as a person and my abilities to work in that kind of situation. I was appointed.
Mm-hmm. How tough was it finding a new president at that time?
We had a lot of candidates, but most of them wanted to be not known that they were searching or that they were in the process of being a candidate. So keeping it confidential that these individuals, major university presidents from all over the country, were candidates, actually. And that was one of the problems that DiBiagio wanted to be sure of, that his candidacy would be kept confidential. We had, as I recall, nearly 100 candidates for the position, and those were whittled down, and we finally got it down to a group of three, and then finally one.
Were there any particular criteria that either the board or that the committee came up with thought that the university really needed at that time?
Well, we were looking for somebody that had the kind of background and reputation where they would have the confidence of the university and the faculty that had shown that they did have the kind of traits, characteristics that make for a successful president, and some of those that already had been presidents and were successful. So we were looking for somebody who appreciated a land-grant kind of university, a number of them actually had experience in that direction. But primarily we're interested in somebody that could lead the institution as it continued to grow, and somebody who could deal successfully with the various segments of the institution and the state that they have to work with in leading an institution like this. So it was everybody has different strong points. The strong point that we saw in DiBiagio was his ability to work with various people. It ended up that he had difficulty with certain elements here, eventually, but he was a very, very good person in working with alumni, working with various kinds of groups, had a kind of personality which was very engaging, actually.
Do you remember how his name first came up in the search? Did in other words, did we call him or did he call us?
He applied.
I see.
And as I say, I don't recall the exact number, it was 70 or 100 different applications.
I see.
And that was a very interesting experience, actually, to follow that through to its conclusion.
You mentioned that you had personal contact as chair with candidate DiBiagio in terms of how did you convince him to stay a candidate or become a candidate?
Well, it's probably convincing him that that his name would be kept secret until the final stages of the process, that we would not release any information concerning that he was a candidate locally, and it was primarily a confidentiality problem. I talked with him he was about to drop out because I'm trying to think of the institution where he was at the time.
Connecticut.
And he had a good job there and had been successful. So he didn't want to damage his institutional relationships there and his position. So talking with him that, the seriousness and the way in which we were going about the process. As I say, at the end of the hour conversation, he decided to stay with it. I think to this day would acknowledge the fact that I was the reason that he stayed in the process.
After, what were your contacts with him after he became president?
Here?
Yes. Or your job at that time?
I was still in academic governance in various ways. So there was that kind of a contact. And had various reasons actually to consult with him. So that continued, actually.
What about the some of the various provosts that you had worked with? Any comments about them?
I worked with Cantlin, I worked with Winder, with McQuitty. Was McQuitty? Quinn McQuitty was only dean.
Okay.
Dean of the Social Science College.
And then Gwen Andrew.
I worked very closely with, most closely actually with Gwen Andrew and Lee Winder. Gwen Andrew, of course, was a member of the College of Social Science. She supported this project here, where we I proposed that we take every position we had in the department, along with some of the graduate students, and had them each look at it in terms of what the applications of their field was, and then invited in about 20 major people in the discipline from various parts of the country. So she supported that. Actually, she was a very good supporter of geography as a dean. She never became provost. Mm-hmm. This was at the dean's level. Mm-hmm. Winder was provost during the latter stages of my tenure as chair, and he was also very, very supportive. I should have stepped down earlier if it wasn't for him. Mm. He wanted me to continue.
So he convinced you to stay on?
Yes. One shouldn't stay in these administrative positions too long. You know. Mm-hmm. They've been shorter and shorter as the time progressed. Mm-hmm. I was chair for 24 years, and you can never do that now. Mm-hmm. And I would never want to do it, knowing what I know now for that length of time. Mm-hmm. But it was a growing period. The challenge was there, and nature of the position, one was actually quite appealing in terms of what it provided in the way of challenge and rewards, and to see the growth of the discipline in the university, which we thought was very, very important for this kind of institution, that geography is actually should play a major role in a land-grant institution such as this.
And you're working with David Scott. Were you assistant to him, or
I was assistant provost? Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to retire, I was in a luncheon which they have every year for retirees in Bradenton, Florida, and I was down there. I hadn't retired at the time. They had this lunch, so for the retirees in that area. So we went to that lunch, and Scott was the major speaker. And after the lunch was over, he said, let's go in this next room. I want to talk to you for a while. It was then, it was then that he offered me the chance to become the assistant provost. It was only supposed to be, that was in the spring, it was only supposed to be for that summer. So in the fall, he wrote me another letter and talked to me. Well, he said, continue for a little bit longer, and it ended up actually being a three-year stint. Mm-hmm.
So he was the head arm twister at the time. What were your main duties as assistant provost, or your oversight?
The academic part of the institution.
I see. Mm-hmm.
The structure and the sort of a relationship into all the units of the university.
Now that was the period when there was a lot of review of the curriculum and program. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about some of those? CRU and Courage and all those acronyms, I know, that came in under David Scott.
Yeah, I came in, to the office when they were developing the agenda and the nature of what this group was supposed to be working towards, and they had a working draft actually as to what the role and purpose and agenda should be, which I didn't agree with. And I think had a major role to play in getting this turned around mm-hmm. to where it was reviewing actually the nature of the undergraduate education program. Mm-hmm. They had it more in terms of the role of women, the role of minorities in the institution as the major role, which were good objectives, but actually it didn't cover the upgrading of the and looking at the problems of the undergraduate instruction and the nature of the academic, what the academic programs were accomplishing. So I served then with that committee as a representative of the provost office for mm-hmm. a period, and again I think played a rather important role.
And that was the council to review undergraduate education.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. How about the semester transition? How